It's the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. What a glorious October day.
Oh, yes, the old fine weather continues.
Absolutely. Good stuff. So we've got another packed show. Loads of interesting people that we're going to talk to.
We have. We've got our second part of the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Show 2016, where we just got some amazing interviews, so couldn't resist putting some more of those on today. And we've got a whole number of things, really. To start with, we've got Rebot. Really nice guy called Anthony, who's created this in-store app that helps people pick a wine.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and I find that quite interesting because when I go into a supermarket, the thing is I know what grape I like, what sort of taste.
Yeah.
So if you like Sauvignon Blanc, you sort of like that gooseberry, sherbety taste.
Yeah.
But when you go into a supermarket, it's all classified by country.
Yeah.
So you get, like, there's the New Zealand wine, there's the Argentinian wine, there's, you know, but they don't classify it by taste. So you spend ages going through supermarket stuff, don't you? Trying to work out what's what. And actually, it's all classified in the wrong way. Who cares what country it comes from,
yeah,
really?
Absolutely. And also, people make this mistake of going by price as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And what, so what he's done, he's got this app and basically you say what sort of taste you like, where you are, what supermarket you're in or whether you're in a off-license or something, and what sort of price range you're happy with. And it'll actually tell you in front of you, it'll light up what wines you're going to like.
Wow.
And you can
okay.
actually say, better than that, what you're going to eat for dinner and what goes with it. And they'll flag up what goes with your dinner that you're having. So you go sausage and mash and it'll go, oh, you need this bottle of wine. It's really clever.
The technology's great.
I was just going to say,
technology is just it's going into so many areas and so many things, and there's so much stuff that you can do.
Yeah.
You know, from takeaway delivery robot dogs all the way through to drones and apps. It's fantastic stuff, isn't it?
Then we've got something really different, which I know sounds a bit odd, but it's very much a part of the sort of restaurant scene, takeaway scene, and that is how on earth do you clean kitchens, and it is a really big problem.
Clean.
Yeah.
And sorry, you lost me there, Sue.
I know you
clean
don't do
kitchen.
Cleaning. Yeah, you don't do cleaning. But it's a real pain for restaurants and chefs because it's the thing that they hate. They have to do a deep clean, and obviously they're trained to be chefs, and it's part of their job that they really, really hate. So there's some interesting automation going on there. And then I've got another guy talking about loyalty apps and how you try and drive people to do that. So
sure.
So those are our first three. And then we've got some really interesting stuff after that, which is about my favourite topic at the moment. Because
yeah.
I know you love barbecues, but hey, no, you got it so wrong, Paul.
The barbecue is not in the zeitgeist anymore.
No,
okay.
Definitely not. No, I like the sort of bread oven, pizza oven thing and how you cook on that. And we've got a really great guy talking about that later. So that's very exciting. I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, loads of good stuff. Shall we have a listen to some of these interviews?
Yeah, starting off with Anthony.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Hi, I'm at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo 2016, and we're at Excel in London. It's packed full of amazing inventions and stuff just to make, I don't know, if you're a restaurant owner or you own a hotel or you've got a fast food business, really interesting innovations just to help you run your business. And I'm joined by Christy, our producer, and also by Anthony Rebo. I'm sure I've got your name right. Have I, Rebo?
You certainly do.
So Anthony Rebo, and we've just been along to his stand because I think most of our listeners will know that me and Christy are a little bit partial to wine, and we came across this stand that was full of bottles of wine, so we thought we'd better go and have a chat with this chap. And he doesn't sell wine. He's come up with an amazing app or experience, which we're going to ask about in a minute, where you can actually work out what wine you want to buy in a supermarket. So what wine, have you got a grape that you like, Christy?
I always go for Sauvignon.
Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes, New Zealand as well.
New Zealand Marlborough?
Yes.
They are. See, that's good. That's, well, I'm a bit of a sort of Chardonnay grape girl. So obviously Burgundy's, Chablis, or Chardonnays. And I quite like New World. I quite like big chunky ones like, well, South Africa's not New World, is it? But South Africa or Chile or Australia. So, nice. So I'm quite partial to that. However, when I go into a supermarket that I'm not used to, I've got all this wall of stuff and I really don't know what to buy. So I sort of think, well, I'll go by grape first because I think I know what that grape tastes like. So you obviously like gooseberry-ish because you're Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the, I don't know who these makers are. Do you? And I get a bit stuck of what to choose.
No, and I just choose the same old wines time and time again because I know that I like them. So I just boring. Go there and try it. That's my one. Have that
That's
one.
Boring, you see. Well, yeah. The thing I do is go for price point. So I think I might go for like £7 or £8, you know, if I'm feeling okay. Or if it's somebody I want to impress, I might.
Asian.
Do a sort of 10 or 12. £10 or £12. Anthony, is my experience typical when you go into a supermarket?
Yes and no. If you look at Tesco's as a supermarket, 75% of people who buy wine at Tesco's actually buy something on special offer. So that's a very interesting stat. But there's another group of people here who actually walk past this, like you described, a wall of wine and are inundated with the choice and are presented with just too many options. And the only decision that they actually end up making is not to make a purchase of a bottle of wine. They don't know which is going to be better. And it's a real problem. You know,
So what you're saying is then that if you get sort of bewildered by that choice, and let's face it, you don't get 200 you know choices of baked beans, do you? You've got literally 200 bottles of wine in a supermarket. But actually, a lot of people are just not making that purchase at all. It's turning them off. Is that right?
Correct.
Oh my God, really? I can't believe that. So I've got a nice meal for tonight and I go along and I'm so bamboozled, I don't bother. I'll go and get some lemonade or a beer. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So, I mean, that's essentially the concept that we've come up with. So to tackle the problem in a slightly different way, to flip the question on its head, not what bottle I should have, but actually what food am I eating tonight? And actually that's a very simple question to answer. Me, I'm going to be eating probably a steak tonight. So I've got very few taste buds, so I drink strong coffees. I like.
He's a bit posh, isn't he? Bloody steak on a. What day is it today? Steak on a Tuesday, goodness me.
Well, I'm up in London, I'm not. But.
I've thrown you off there. Sorry, what you're saying is, right, I'm going to go into the supermarket, I'm going to eat steak tonight, so therefore, help me with my choice.
Yes, and that's the little experience that we've come up with here. There's an iPad with a simple app which presents you these options, pasta, meats, vegetarian dishes, and you just tap on just one option, and at that point, you're shown five or six bottles on the iPad, and that's pretty usual. But at the same point, which is the magical bit, those same five or six bottles light up in that wall of wine, helping you to make the decision.
What do you mean light up in that wall of wine? How does that, I don't understand that. So say I'm in, how does it know I'm in Tesco's, for example? Or is it just, it just says you need this type of bottle, or do they actually give you the labels?
So it's custom to each experience, really. It's the iPad is actually installed into the space rather than the aisle, and that's one of the things we were trying to explore, a kind of a death of aisles in grocery stores and a birth of spaces, because spaces are essentially what we, spaces and experiences are what we live for. So trying to create, to put more kind of a fun element and a human element back into to the experience. So there's just a single iPad and there can only be one person in control of it at one point in time, but upon tapping what you're going to eat tonight, essentially, magically, all these little LEDs along the wall of wine light up, indicating those five or six bottles.
So let me get this right. This sounds like it's magic. Do you understand this, Christy? So I'm in a supermarket and I've got a wall of wine, and this app will actually tell me exactly which six bottles in front of me it sort of lights up that I can buy that would suit this meal.
Absolutely correct.
Oh my God, it's awesome.
It sounds absolutely brilliant, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're going to have to try this. We're going to have to try this. And what's the name of the app?
There's a kind of a demo name, Vinopero.
Vino Pero. Yes, I get that. Let's get that. And whereabouts is it on the development cycle at the moment?
It really is just a prototype at this stage, and we just wanted to take 2 days out at the conference to showcase it to people, to showcase the thinking behind it, because there's a lot behind the scenes that's going on. There's a lot. It's about connecting the right things together to make sure the actual end experience is one, simple, but it's that simplicity which leads to something that's magical and actually useful to someone.
And the thing with great technology for me is it might happen very, very quickly, which is exactly what people expect. And yet underneath there's so much processing power. It's incredible. It could almost take somebody to the moon, you know, sort of thing. How technically are you managing to match up what's in front of you, or is that a trade secret?
It's a very good question. So to get technical for a little bit, so what we've got is an iPad, an app, a prototype app running on the iPad that is internet connected. There is a Raspberry Pi behind the shelf which is listening to the iPad, and that is then controlling, I think, 5 strips of LEDs. Then there's a special program that sends across messages to certain LEDs to light them up. We've worked together with a local reseller of wine in Brighton, and she's put together all the pairings herself, so and the wines are quite nice, and you can actually come to us to our little booth and taste them.
Well, this is an app that I think you really do have to, you know, carry on and get released, because I think it's going to help so many people. And you're either going to be like Christy, who's really boring and buys the same thing every week, day in, you know, week in, week out, or like me and just goes for a grape and a price point. But this is going to really help. And I don't think people are trying enough different wines. So I'm really impressed. Aren't you?
Yeah, so am I. I can't wait to see it in the supermarket.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
I look forward to seeing you both at the booth and everyone else.
Earlier today, I was judging the Kitchen Innovation Awards at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo 2016. And it was a really, really close run thing. And unfortunately for Jeff Hunt, who was company director here, he came a very, very, very close second from the person who won it. I was particularly impressed, Jeff, by the cleaning solutions that you have. And if anybody's worked in a kitchen, summer job, or actually their real job, they'll know how dirty, greasy it can be, and everybody has to do a deep clean, and it's often the bit that people who work in the industry hate doing. But what you're doing is actually quite revolutionary. So I've got a picture here. Can you just explain exactly what your product is?
Yeah, it's basically a safe cleaning solution. Over the last 3 years, we've put together something that we've seen all the problems everybody's had and we've had, put it together for a safe, clean and efficient solution. With non-harmful chemicals, products to seal joints that are leaking, and basically stop odours, smells in kitchens, and just make it a more efficient solution.
So what exactly do you do? Because in a kitchen, you'll have an extractor fan, and you'll have big pipes and tubing, really difficult people to get in there and clean. What exactly do you do? I mean, I know that you said to me you can actually, some of these ducting stuff can go up metres and metres in the air. How is it that you're different here?
Well, we have an exclusive robot system that will go 30 metres, and it has centralisers on it to keep the brush exactly straight in the middle of the ductwork. Different size brushes, but the main thing is the chemical is injected through the machine, and it's a foam system, so it sticks to the ductwork. And everybody knows that heat, chemical, and agitation is the only way you can clean, and you can't do that with a spray bottle solution.
So instead of somebody rolling their sleeves up and getting out a spray thing, and they've got the scrubbing brush, which is horrible if anybody's cleaned out any of that stuff, essentially you're almost doing it automatically.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could just press a button and it would go all the way and do everything. But
I didn't mean it quite that automatically. But
we'd sell loads if we could do that. Yeah. But yeah, it's safe for everybody. For the cleaning operative is the main safety issue, because when people are working on nights, which is most of the cleaning work is done out of hours, you know, you don't want somebody calling you up saying they've just burnt themselves or they've dropped something, and it's a spray bottle in a ductwork could fall 10 foot and hit somebody on the head. And it's dangerous. One of our lances might fall and hit somebody on the head. They they'll get a bruise, but they'll be safe to go to work the day after.
Absolutely. And in terms of the chemicals that are used, obviously people use some quite strong chemicals, not particularly environmentally friendly, but it does have an effect on the joints and the adhesives that putting some of this stuff together. And the great benefit of using what you do is actually it makes the equipment last longer.
Yeah, the chemical is specially developed by myself with a company in the Netherlands, and it's safe to use. It's no ADR rating, so it can go on your seat on an aeroplane. You could take it. It's completely harmless to the environment, to the people using it, and it doesn't damage the ductwork. I mean, grease damages ductwork. If grease is sat in a joint for a long period of time, even the grease can burn through. So we can clean the grease out. We have a EcoSeal solution, seal the joints to make it leak-free and smell-free.
Well, it's a sort of no-brainer, really, to use this sort of thing. I also believe that it saves on energy and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you seal the system up, stop any leakages, you're going to have a more efficient system. And obviously, according to legislation, all systems should be airtight and watertight. And when they're installed, the fan rating is set for a certain size of ductwork. And obviously, as soon as there's any leakages, that is compromised.
So in terms of legislation, people are going to have to look at solutions like this because they don't really have much choice. But in terms of health and safety, the environment, and who wants to roll their sleeves up and do this stuff manually, really, it's a really good solution.
Yeah, I mean, even small companies with small budgets are really interested because they can see the long-term potential of a better offering to the clients. At the end of the day, it's the restaurants, takeaways, hotels who are paying the money for the job. And if we can make it more efficient for them and a better offering for the cleaning company, and that's what we're about.
Well, it's a jolly good product. And I think the thing is with cleaning and any of that sort of side of it, it's a bit of a Cinderella part of the industry, isn't it? But it's probably the most important, because if you have anything that, you know, remotely infects the food that you have and you make somebody ill, you lose customers, you're in serious trouble. So whilst people like to forget about it, it's probably one of the most important things in the industry.
Yeah. It's sometimes seen of out of sight, out of mind, but it's more of an environmental health issue as well, because grease is a live product, and if that's dripping back into the kitchen, it's like having old food unrefrigerated. It is really, really important. Yeah. It's important for health and safety and environmental health reasons.
Well, very good. Really impressed by this. And if you're in the cleaning world, or you have, you know, restaurants and stuff that are really quite difficult and it's taking up a lot of your time, you need to get in contact with these guys. What's your website address?
The website address is www.heyuk.co.uk.
Couldn't be easier. Heyuk.co.uk. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, I'm sitting here with Jeremy Eames, who's our presenter on the Tech Talk show, but he's come on to the Food Talk show today, because this is slightly techy, isn't it, this next one?
It is. It's very techy at this conference, Sue. I'm loving it.
You love it. I know you love it. Obviously, I'm too old for the technology stuff.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. And I'm joined by Simon Kelton, and he's the founder of something called Pepper. Simon, just before we get on to the debate about, branding, which I'm quite interested in, can you just tell everybody what Pepper actually does as a company?
The simplest way to describe Pepper is to say that it is a white label version of the Starbucks mobile payment and digital loyalty app.
Well, that's a mouthful. So what is, just explain what white label means for a start.
White label means that you get your own fully branded app. So if you're Pret A Manger, who we built the app for, or Pure, or Crush, or one of these other companies that we're working with, it is fully your own branded app, which obviously, if you're interested in branding, is completely critical in hospitality. You want to be owning your look and feel and having your customers come to your app. They don't want to go to a third party, what we call a B2C app.
And that happens quite a lot, doesn't it, in business, in that a lot of people are using white labeling. So essentially what they do is buy a service or buy a product, and although somebody else is supplying it and even running it for them sometimes, what they do is they put a skin on it. They actually put their own brand on it so that it looks like the whole experience is from that one company. And that side of it's getting bigger and bigger, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. So the analogy would be that we've built a Rolls-Royce engine, and if you want to come along and trick out the car with your own spoilers and mag strips and green stripe, you can. We don't mind about that. What we mind about is the platform and how that operates. And it's very open and flexible. And what that means is that you can then choose to swap out different loyalty platforms or business intelligence systems or CRMs, whatever it is you want to change and upgrade. And this is the critical thing for the way of the future for tech in hospitality, so that people don't want to get stuck in a closed wall system where they've got one EPOS working with one app and they can't switch things out. It's all about best of breed now.
So, Jeremy, you like to customise your cars, do you?
I wish I had the money to customise my cars, Sue. Yeah, maybe one day.
But I think that's a good analogy, isn't it? Where you've got a car and you've got all the things that work on that car, but actually you then want to, you know, customise it. Mini's done a really good job at that, actually.
And I think you summed it up when you at the start of the interview when you mentioned already like three different competitors, and the hospitality world is so competitive and people need to stand out and they need to be unique within their branding. And if so, for that reason, your platform has to be flexible in order to attract people to come and use it and to make it their own and stand out with their competitors. So I think that's really interesting.
And you've got a bit of a marketing background, and brand is incredibly important, isn't it? You spend so much time and effort making sure the brand is absolutely right, that the colours are right, that everybody's on, you know, on sort of on the page in terms of even answering the phone, that actually giving something away for somebody else to run is a pretty dangerous thing, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Definitely. I mean, you know, it's a visual thing as well. If your brand's not right, a brand is kind of like a person. And when people think about a brand, they think of their logo, they think of, you know, advertising, they think of all those sort of things. So you really need to stand out.
It's not just visual, is it? Every brand has its personality. I mean, I think one of the things I would worry about if I had a brand I'd spent a lot of money on is that I'm suddenly giving a whole thing away, even if it is, you know, white labelled, that somebody's got all the data or whatever. So how do you work with these companies and make sure that you become part of them, so to speak?
You don't need to worry about that with us, because you own the data. We only co-own it in terms of us being able to use aggregated data for the industry. So if we want to make general comments about trends in coffee or QSRs and things like that, we can work that out. But the most exciting thing from the point of view of brand and marketing is the automated marketing platform that we built. So what this does is the app acts as a kind of vacuum to hoover up all this delicious data from your customers that you've never really known in the past. They come in and they buy a coffee. You don't know who they are or what they do or how often they come in or anything else. We can now tell you everything about them that's useful both to you and to them. Because now, instead of sending out spam emails or silly offers that aren't targeted, you can send them absolutely specifically to their phone, which, as we know, everybody has on them 24 hours a day. And you have a marketing carousel at the bottom where you can actually segment different audiences so that constantly they're only getting offers and promotions and information that is strictly relevant to them. And then you can supplement that with push notifications, SMS texts if we want, so that you begin a real dialogue with your customers.
Because I hate that, do you? I hate unsolicited emails. In fact, that puts
it's
me
so
off
annoying.
A brand.
Yeah, it is. But I think where marketing's going is kind of the segmentation and how it's about individual people and individual groups. You can't just kind of cup everyone into the same boat. And so it's really interesting that you've developed a software that is enabling that for businesses. I mean, that's brilliant, you know, because I hate it when I get a group email from someone. Whereas, you know, on Facebook, for example, everything's way more tailored now in adverts. And I think that's really interesting that you're moving forward.
I actually think it damages a brand. So I remember once, this was a long time ago, when sort of targeted messaging was coming across, and I was getting Aldi cars, I don't know, just sent me adverts about every 90 seconds. Now, it doesn't matter how wonderful they are, I will never buy an Aldi, because it felt like an infringement of my, I don't know, my airspace, my time, my person. So it can damage a brand, I think.
Definitely. I think that if you're trying to cup everyone into the same boat, then, you know, you might as well not bother. It's just saying, oh, you know, we don't think you're that special. We think you're the same as everyone else, and we're just trying to make as much money as we can out of you. And I think that's the thing.
And so what you're doing is excellent, because what it allows people to do is really tailor it. Because actually, I do want to know about offers, and I do want to know about, you know, new products, but only when it's things that I'm interested in, and only occasionally. And this allows you to filter that, essentially.
Absolutely. And we offer 10 different loyalty programs. We basically looked in marketing in general across various different industries. And I think we'd all agree that probably the only ones who have done loyalty really well are airlines and rental car companies, where I find myself very specifically making the choice to buy a more expensive rental car for the week or airline ticket if I know it wraps me into a great loyalty program. So we can do status-based, where, for example, you might be part of the Vital Club and you become a gold member because you go in very regularly, and then you get access to special events and special offers and special treatment. But it could be as simple as I'm a marketing director and I want to send out a reward to everyone of a specific age or in a specific location or has a certain buying pattern and give them a present for their birthday. And I can do that at a touch of a couple of buttons, just filtering things in.
That's definitely how marketing's going, I think. And I suppose what it is, it's a step up from the little card that you get where somebody stamps, you know, I've now bought my third coffee out of eight. And this is actually exactly that, but very, very sophisticated.
Yeah, I think that's that. You've just summed it up perfectly there. Literally, you honestly have. On a technical,
in a
technical world, you've summed that up with a physical thing.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Can you just let everybody know where they can find out more about this if they want to look at white labelling?
Very easy. Just go to pepperhq.com and give us a call or send us an email.
Pepperhq.com. That's easy to remember. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
That was really fascinating. There were three really interesting interviews there. I like white labelling of all kinds of things.
It does have its downsides as well as its upsides, I think, white labelling.
Yeah.
But so many people are using it and you don't even realise, and that is the point of white labelling, obviously.
Yeah.
But loyalty, really interesting stuff. And you can't just send out loads of emails to people. It's so annoying and actually just puts you off.
Yeah.
But loyalty's critical in business, isn't it?
It is. I mean, even years ago when I used to talk about customer service and customer loyalty and stuff like that, there was even a book called it, you know, it's Customers as Raving Fans and stuff like that, where you know it's so much easier if your fans, if your users, if your customers like you and love you and talk about you all the time. And this whole loyalty thing bleeds into that. But I agree with you. You know, I go, one of the things that really drives me nuts is, you know, like supermarket loyalty cards. Now, I'm not interested. Loads of people stand at the checkout cutting up their coupons and
please.
All that.
And my wife's far too busy for that.
I can't be bothered with that. I really can't be bothered. And people, you queue up and they go, have you got the Tesco card or whatever, and it's in my wallet, and I go, no, I just can't be bothered.
I mean, obviously, for some people who are on a really difficult budget, you can understand it's important.
Of course.
But for me, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I think what we were finding at the show, talking to quite a lot of retailers there, is what they're saying is, how can I reward my most loyal customers?
Yeah,
and how can I reward those who spend a lot of money? How can I filter those out? How can I give them something which is very valuable and make them even more loyal to me? And they want to try and filter that out instead of just sending everything to everybody because they know it's annoying.
Yeah.
So I think the technology is beginning to get there. And we all want to keep our best customers. We all want to keep our best customers happy, don't we?
Absolutely. And it's interesting. Last week on the Tech Talk show, we had some guys from Adaval that were talking about ad blockers, which sounded odd, except it wasn't really ad blocking at all. What they were trying to get you to do is to stop spamming people that didn't want to be spammed with remarketing and retargeting ads. And I think that's part of the same phenomena that says if you just blatter things at people, they switch off completely. If you can tailor it, if you can give people choices so they can choose some things and not others, then they're going to buy into it.
Yeah, because I do want to know when some of those things are on, but not every day. Thank you very much.
So
I think that was a very interesting trend. And I think Simon, you know, has really hit the nail on the head there that loyalty is important. And that's in any area of business. It's not just the food sector. I've got three other pre-records for you, Paul. And again, a really great mix from the show. I tasted some sunflower oil. Now, I know that sounds odd. And we've tasted a lot of olive oil and stuff like that. This sunflower oil was absolutely delicious. I couldn't believe it.
You've been drinking sunflower oil?
Yeah.
Really?
Honestly, yeah. So we're talking to Martin McHugh from Flav Oil. Oh. They haven't actually released the product yet, but try that if it comes on the supermarket shelves.
Right.
Then we had Ordu. And again, lots of things at the show about how do I make it very quick for my customer to get through, to pay, you know, to pay in advance. And you know, so I can pay, I might be on the bus or, walking from the office, I want my coffee ready, I pay for it before, and I just rock up and it's ready, sitting there waiting for me. And a lot of technology was about how do we solve those sorts of problems. And then my absolute favourite was talking to Andrew from Valeriani.
Valeriani,
and he had lots of nice Italian people on his stand. And he was the first person to bring these sort of bread pizza ovens into the UK and work with Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver did loads that and set the company up with him. So that's a great interview. Cool. We'll talk about that afterwards.
Yeah.
Should we have a bit of a barbecue?
I do indeed, I like a bit of a pizza as well.
Yeah.
Should we have a listen?
Yes.
Let's do that.
Well, we're on day two of the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo 2016. We had a great day yesterday. There's so many innovations going on, and I didn't quite realise actually how takeaway and restaurant innovation is just changing very, very quickly and moving quickly. And I'm joined by my co-presenter, Brady. This is your first day here, isn't it?
It is indeed.
I was here yesterday and there's so much to see. You're going to have to find time, I don't know how, to go around and look at everything. We're joined by Martin McHugh, and he's part of Flavoil. And we've seen quite a lot of oils recently on our programme. This is sunflower oil. And I'm going to ask Martin, this says here, I don't know if I've pronounced it right, I hope I have, it says high oleic sunflower oil from Flavoil. Hi Martin, can you tell me what that means?
Yes, high oleic sunflower oil is an absolutely new product for the home. It's been used extensively by important food processors like crisp manufacturers for a number of years. It's a perfectly natural product. It's not genetically modified or anything. It's a strain of natural sunflowers, but it performs very, very well at high temperatures. And this is an important feature, because in recent years, very recently, there's been a concern about aldehydes and products that are harmful to the health being created unknowingly by chefs using innocent oils but at high temperatures that they're not really designed for. Hoso is specifically very, very high performing at high temperatures.
I see. So the thing with sunflower oil, it does mean that that we can cook really, really sort of really, really high, very, very quick, and you're not going to get all that burning, smoking and all that sort of stuff. But also it doesn't change the sort of nature of the oil, so you're not creating some Frankenstein thing that you didn't intend. Is that what you meant?
That's exactly right, and that's the message that we need to get through. As a matter of fact, the biochemistry of oil is fascinating, but very, very complex. It's a difficult thing to get over to people who maybe are not interested in chemistry or don't really understand things that, like molecules and biochemistry, about aldehydes, etc.
You're just describing me there, Martin. I have no idea. In fact, I'm afraid to say I failed my chemistry O level. So that's definitely me. But the main thing to take away from this, of course, is that you can cook at very high temperatures, and it's natural, and it's good for you. We've got cold-pressed sunflower oil here. Now, I know we don't grow sunflowers in the UK because our climate's not right. Maybe it will be one day. There's not an indigenous sunflower oil, and I know you import it. Why is it so important for it to be cold-pressed? What does that mean?
Well, cold-pressed is the exact equivalent of extra virgin olive oil. Olive oil has a great heritage going back to the Romans. The sunflower was not available in Europe in those years. In the very recent past, say in the last year or so, cold-pressed oils of different origin have become very popular among the cognoscenti. So, for example, you're seeing quite a lot of cold-pressed rapeseed oil, but Flavor's cold-pressed sunflower oil is one of only two on the market at the moment.
And cold-press means there's no temperature involved. You literally squeeze the sunflower seeds or whatever it is until you get that natural oil coming out. So there's no temperature. Because the problem with cooking, isn't it, or applying temperature to things like oils, is actually you do lose the some of the natural qualities.
You lose the spirit of the oil. You lose its fundamental character. People who enjoy eating oil with bread, which is something you don't do in England as much as you do abroad, it's a wonderful thing. Beautiful bread with beautiful oil. And the sunflower, as you can imagine, has a wonderful complex character, which would be lost in refining. When we refine sunflower oil, it produces a completely taste-neutral oil, which is prized by by chefs as well, because it lets the flavour flood through. But the cold pressed oil is the exact equivalent of an extra virgin olive oil, and it's well worth trying because it's really, really nice character.
So that is my quote for today so far. I know this is pretty early on in the day. Beautiful bread with beautiful oil is
Where's
a wonderful
bread?
Thing. We haven't got any bread. We need to have a taste, don't we? We need to have a taste. So it's flav oil. If you haven't tried cold pressed sunflower oil, which I don't think I have, you need to give that a try. Where can we get hold of it, Martin?
We are launching a number of products at this fair. So we are selling it into wholesalers at the moment. I think it will be available in the shops within the next 3 to 4 months.
The next 3 to 4, we've got to wait that long, Brady. And so you have to wait for your bread, I'm afraid about. So look out for that. Cold pressed sunflower oil should be in the shops probably in the new year. Thank you very much, Martin. I'm sitting here with Brady, who's a colleague of mine on the Food Talk show. And when I was watching the Olympics, which was fabulous, wasn't it, this year? It was absolutely amazing. And of course, Team GB did brilliantly. There was real uproar about food service. I don't know if you heard about that, Brady.
Yeah.
And there were queues for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes for people to get their, they get their food and their drink. And of course, in some places, it was really, really hot and people were like getting very, very angry. When you're
hangry
as in hungry and angry, yeah. But when you're doing that sort of service, I'm sure the logistics of Olympic Games is absolutely phenomenal. Actually, keeping people who are in the audience or stadiums well fed and watered is can affect the whole mood.
It just sounds like such a nightmare, doesn't it?
I know. It's like a pop concerts and stuff. You know, you want your stuff there and then. Now I'm joined by Tom Dewhurst. And he's from a company called Ordo, which is O-R-D-O-O. I presume you know all about this problem that was at the Olympic Games.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No one likes to queue up for their alcohol or food. So, you know, that's a massive problem. And it's one we're actually really dedicated to solve and avoid people having to wait around in queues is our kind of core company mission. So
Even when the British people love queuing, I mean, it's a sort of like a national sport. It's the thing we are very good at. But actually, people don't really like queuing, do they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are very polite and we do stand in queues, but no one really enjoys them. We want to be able to offer an alternative for the people who are potentially busy and, you know, don't want to wait around in the queues. Especially, you know, we do a lot of lunchtime trade as well, so people, office workers, who time is money for them, and we help them avoid standing around wasting their time.
So we've got a problem there. You've identified a problem, which is always a good way to start our business, I think. So you've seen that there's a problem. People are hanging around. We're very time poor.
Yeah.
So many people, presumably office workers and stuff, you know, are actually don't get an hour's lunch, even though they probably get paid to have an hour's lunchtime. That, you know, time is precious. You've identified this problem. So what have you done about it? What have you invented and what are you developing?
Yeah, so Ordo is a mobile ordering app for customers to order and pay in advance at cafes, coffee shops, lunch spots and bars. So it means that they can beat the queue and also start to earn loyalty rewards on their smartphone. So customer brings up the menu of their favourite place, they can select what they want, check out, select the time that they prefer to pick it up, and they'll get notification when it's ready. So they'll go into the place, hopefully their order will be ready and waiting for them there, so they can just grab it and go. Means that no waiting around in queues and, you know, very, very streamlined ordering and collection process, and that's basically the product that we've built.
And I would imagine that that's really great for small coffee shops and other places because they haven't got, you know, the technology or the money to develop something like that themselves, and it allows them to sort of buy that in.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a very similar functionality to the Starbucks ordering and loyalty app, actually, and we've basically opened up that technology to the smaller independent venues or the small chains that don't have the millions that these big companies do to invest in these smartphone technologies. So anyone looking to kind of be on the leading edge of technology but doesn't have the massive resources up front to invest in it, you know, that's kind of where we're hoping to be able to help and hopefully work with those kind of companies.
I do think it's interesting. There's some real interesting trends that we're finding at the Takeaway Innovation Show that we are at this week, and a lot of it is about delivery and a lot of it is about, you know, customer satisfaction. And so many people, we were talking to Just Eat people yesterday, so many people are saying that the way people consume food, order food, expect to be served is completely different from what it was 10 years ago. And people's expectations of service and quick service is completely different, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, consumers' behaviours are changing all the time, like how they're consuming food, how they're purchasing it, how also restaurants interact with their customers, because delivery means that they sometimes lose that personal interaction. Even our collection means they get fleeting interaction with the customers. But I think there's a kind of more omni-channel approach that can be taken in restaurant to contact their customers, interact with their customers over social media, over reviews, or, you know, after the event. It's not just a one-time interaction now, it's an ongoing relationship. So I think that the, you know, the restaurants still have the opportunity to connect in those kind of ways, but it is definitely impacting how they do that with collection and delivery, for sure.
Yeah, and it is about making this relationship with your customers and yeah, really trying to help them and give them what they want, the way they want to be served. So if I'm a little coffee shop and I'm very interested in Ordo, O-R-D-O-O, where do I go?
Well, the first point of call is obviously our website, .co.uk, ordo.co.uk. So we've got all our information on there about what the benefits are to the customers and what the benefits are to the restaurants. And, you know, we're a very digital and social company as well, so we recommend checking out our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of great stuff. So, you know, you can see what we're about there. And we like to sort of fit in with the independent theme. Like we're quite down to earth company, and like we engage heavily over these channels. So that's another benefit that we can add, you know, with us partnering with us, is, you know, that social interaction and maybe helping people engage with a slightly younger audience over these digital channels. And that's, you know, something that I'd recommend, finding us online and then visiting our website.
So that's a really good point. Not just to go to you just because of the amazing app that you've built and that people can use that, but actually to gain from your experience and maybe move into a different target market if you're struggling with that. That's a very good point, I think. Tom Dewhurst from Ordo, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'm joined by Christy Ellis, who's a producer on the Food Talk Show. And Christy, you've been around my house with your kids and you've partaken, and you must say it's good, you've partaken in me cooking pizzas in my pizza oven outside.
Yes, I have. Pizza party. It was amazing.
And I was cooking pizzas in there in 90 seconds.
Yeah. Really, really super quick. The kids were absolutely loving it. I think we must have cooked about 20 though. It's a bit ridiculous.
It was, but what's a great thing is the kids can put all their own toppings on, yeah, use the old long stick thing, it gets shoved in. What a lot of people don't realise is it's not just for pizzas, of course. I cook all sorts of things in there. So when the heat dies down and you've got all that lovely wood burning, you can put a great big casserole dish in there, just leave it for a couple of hours as the heat's going down and down and down. And oh god, you can use it for so many things. But it means you have to learn how to cook in a very different way, because there's no temperature buttons or anything like that. You've got to get used to doing the wood burning. And I'm joined, because I'm really excited about this, because I'm a real convert. I'm joined by Andrew, I've forgotten how you pronounce your name, Manchocchi, I think he said. Andrew, and his company's called Valoriani. UK? Do you see a little bit of Italian there? A little bit of Italian going on there. And he's probably done more to bring pizza, bread ovens, whatever you want to call them, wood ovens, into the UK than anybody else. Andrew, how on earth did you start on your journey of converting us all to cooking what I would call properly?
Ti preferisci parli inglese o parli italiano?
I'm not very good at Italian, are you?
English, please.
I know, but Italian does sound very nice.
Okay, so let's go back probably nearly, 20 years now. My father was Italian, died young, sadly. I picked up the heritage, really loved pizza, wanted a great pizza, wanted a pizza oven, couldn't get one anywhere. I was had an insurance career. And one day I was on the internet looking for a pizza oven, couldn't find one, found a lady in America. She said, try talking to these people in Italy. And the people in Italy were a kilometre from where we lived and where we had all our holidays. And I thought, somebody upstairs is trying to tell me something. And I went to see these guys in Italy called Valoriani, and I said, look, I'd like to do this in the UK. And he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm probably going to sell you about 5 ovens in the next 2 years, and I want a UK exclusive. And he said, are you mad? I said, I don't know, but that's what I want. And anyway, we got on and he agreed to it. So here we are now, 17 years later, because it took a while to do. And yeah, we're now a sort of shared family business, and it's all going very, very well. Let's just say that.
The reason why I got a pizza oven, I have to admit, is it was Jamie Oliver, really. I was watching one of his cooking programmes, and I just was so seduced by the fact that, you know, first of all, it's fire, and it wasn't so blokey either, because quite often with the barbecue thing, it feels very manly. And I just thought it was quite a family-based thing. And of course, it tastes great. You've got a link with that, haven't you, the Jamie Oliver thing?
Yeah, Jamie and I were partners for a few years. It was great for both of us at the time. We had both had a shared passion about wood fire cooking. I'd done all of Jamie's ovens at his home, and he just wanted to get involved in the business. And we worked together for about 4 years, and then we reached a point where we felt that we were going in different directions. So I went back doing the ovens on my own again. We're still in touch, and we still do ovens for Jamie and for his dad and for his family. And yeah, I mean, it was a great time. We really enjoyed it, and he's a lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah, and I really quite like the way he cooks, in that it's not fussy. It's about you using your eyes and your ears and your, you know, and your nose, and really trying to understand what you're cooking rather than just getting a list of ingredients.
My own view on it is that I think all good cooking comes from the heart. You talk to a chef that's actually good at what he does. You have a good meal in a restaurant, I guarantee you talk to the chef and he's cooked it with passion. He's not cooked it with a cooker or ingredients. He's cooked it with passion. And that's what Jamie's got. I mean, one of the first times I stood talking to Jamie, he said, my problem is I'm a food geek, you know, and it's true, he is. And you know, I think anybody that really can cook, cooks from the heart.
It's about passion, isn't it? In terms of a Valoriani, if I wanted to get myself a pizza oven, generally they're around £2,000, aren't they? There's a few companies selling them here. For me, it's worth it, because it does change the way that you cook. And it's such a centrepiece when you have people round. It's such a family thing. But, of course, businesses are buying these too, and cooking properly, cooking pizzas properly.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I'll tell you a little story. Going back maybe 10 years, and a gentleman in London who supplies food produce said to me, you're onto something, he said, because I'm telling you now that once people get onto this proper cooked pizza, proper cooked food kind of concept, he said, the electric oven will die and everybody will have to have a wood fired or a proper authentic oven. And we're 10 years down the road, and that is starting to happen. You're starting to see now all the big chains, all the big restaurants and small restaurants and takeaways are all now looking at this traditional style wood-fired cooking solution. And, you know, you can see that the electric oven has had its day.
People can tell the difference, can't they, when they're eating food that isn't in a normal oven. It's been cooked with fire. People really can tell the difference.
Well, again, another little interesting story. The Valoriani ovens are classified by the AVPN, the Association Verace Pizza Napoletana. And the only way they got that classification was by blind food testing of a group of gentlemen. You can imagine a group of Italian gentlemen sat around a table eating pizza, probably all in their 70s and 80s and know everything about everything and probably know nothing about nothing. So it's all about the taste.
And also joined here by Stephen Talbot. And I know Stephen works closely with you, Andrew, because you can have the best pizza oven in the world, but if you're not using the right wood or using the right fuel, you're not going to get the best results. So for my little pizza oven, what would you think that... What would you recommend with your extensive knowledge of sort of fuel and wood? Can I just use anything, or is that very, very naive, Stephen?
Yeah, well, lots of people have got these pizza ovens, lots of people have got stoves, they've got lots of appliances now they've spent a lot of money on, but ultimately when they've got these pieces of kit, they haven't used the right wood, they've used inferior wood, so this could just be a piece of wood you've got in the garden. So we chop a tree down and we actually think that will do for the oven. I always say to people a little bit of a story, if you buy a brand new car and you take it to a petrol station, you wouldn't refuse to put the petrol in and try and put water in there because you know full well that the car needs the right fuel in there to make it work. So exactly the same. So when you buy a piece of kit, if you buy an oven, you're spending a little bit of money there, and ultimately you need to have the right fuel to get the right result.
So do seriously people just chop down stuff, you know, in their garden and think that's going to be okay? Do they really do that?
They certainly do. We have more horror stories.
In fact, some garden, actually. Something that I would do, I'm sure. I haven't got a clue.
It's not dried properly.
Oh, I know, but I wouldn't know.
I think there's more of an understanding now. I think, you know, we've always said that we could write a book on the stories that we've heard, from disasters to even very serious disasters where people have put wood onto appliances and blocked up chimneys purely because the amount of lignins, as we call them, which is the liquid inside the wood, not been dried out. So therefore, what you've actually got is something quite lethal that actually can do damage. You can do damage to your pizza oven or your stove, but ultimately, get the right dry wood. And our wood happens to be kiln dried. So this wood is actually something that is actually gone through a kiln drying process for a good number of days. It dries out the wood, so what you get is something that will do work perfectly, give the length of burn with the amount of heat that's needed to create the perfect pizza.
And as far as taste is concerned, different sorts of wood will give you different taste. What's your favourite, you know, that you would use? I presume you have a pizza oven.
Absolutely. So again, over the years, we've all tried lots of different woods. So we supply wood by type. So you can have oak, you can have ash, you can even have birch if you really want to, although we don't recommend it for pizza ovens for cooking on. But the one that most people seem to have settled with, that we've talked to, that we've dealt with over many years now for cooking on, is alder. Alder is an old traditional British wood that was used for many, many years for traditional British cooking. And there was a reason why they chose it. There's a reason why they used to grow it on their small areas of so many acres. And that wood is still around today. So it's older wood because it has a beautiful aroma. It lights extremely well. The temperature is achieved very quickly and enables you to, again, have a perfect cooking situation.
So that's the wood that you should go for, alder. What sort of smell does it give?
So it is a member of the fruitwood family. So it does give you quite a fruity aroma, as we call it. And often it will sit there in your house or in the area where you've got your pizza oven and give you this lovely aroma there.
So back to Andrew. It's making me salivate after all this.
Can we have pizza tonight?
Yeah, I think we might have pizza tonight. So just back to you. This is set to continue. This is a real trend that you really believe we're going to see more and more people cooking using those types of ovens.
I've been saying for many years that why wouldn't any back garden, why wouldn't any restaurant want a wood-fired oven? I think the problem has been accessibility. I think part of the problem was for a long time we were ploughing a lone furrow. Now we've got lots of competitors, so people are accepting the product more readily. I think there's a learning curve to go through about what's good and what's bad and what will sustain and what won't sustain. But for sure, these things are here to stay. I mean, the guy that used to work with me, he's sadly left, but he's always just said, Andrew, we're not even a fly on the windscreen yet. And he's absolutely right. If you look at the American market, even barbecue distributors will tell you, barbecues are on the wane, the wood-fired oven is coming. Barbecue, watch out.
And I'd endorse that. I would say if you're considering spending a lot of money on a barbecue for next summer, why don't you check out the wood oven as well, because it's a really great alternative. So just a quick, Andrew, just a quick call out. Where can we find your pizza ovens online?
Okay, so you'd find us at www.valoriani.co.uk. That's spelled V-A-L-O-R-I-A-N-I. As you say, there's videos there. You can even see videos of us doing barbecue cooking with a Tuscan grill in the pizza oven. So don't give up the barbecue completely. Just use an oven to do it.
That sounds good. And Stephen, where do we get your wood from?
Okay, so if you look again online at www.logsdirect.co.uk.
It's fairly simple. I'm off for a little bit of pizza now. What about you?
Me too. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You see, the pizza's dead. Pizza's dead. The barbecue's dead, Paul.
He didn't quite say that at the end, did he?
He sort of did.
He kind of implied it. Maybe it was fading away.
Yeah.
No, I'm a foot in both camps.
Yeah.
I like a bit of barbecue, but yeah. I'm not averse to a good, well cooked pizza in a proper wood burning pizza oven.
Yeah, it's not just pizzas though, and I think that's the appeal for me. And I bought a present once for somebody to do barbecue cooking. You know, at Weber's, the Weber's do these huge barbecues.
Yeah,
they have a sort of barbecue cookery school. And all they did the whole time was say that you shouldn't barbecue on an open barbecue. You should always put the hood down.
Right, okay.
So they're always saying, this is how you cook. So the whole way that you cook on a barbecue is to have the hood down. So for me, what is the point of that?
Yeah.
If you're going to have the hood down, you might as well cook in a wood-burning oven, really.
Yeah.
Because the wood is circulating and, yeah. and also you can control the temperature much better.
Yeah, and I guess you're by doing that with the lid down, you're partially smoking the food as well yeah. because it's got a smell. No, so I get that. No, I
think it's
that.
About controlling the temperature, though. And what they say on their hoods, really, is that there's a temperature gauge, which means that you can really control what you're doing.
Mm.
But that sort of isn't a barbecue, is it, in a way?
Yeah, no, that's right.
For me, the best barbecues are when you've got like one of those temporary takeaway ones
yeah.
and you just rock up at the beach and you're all having a good time and then you'll cook some sausages and that's really barbecuing for me.
No. Real barbecuing is when you go to the beach, collect driftwood, let it dry, put some seaweed on it, set fire to it, shove a bit of stick up a fish and put it over. That's a real barbecue.
Maybe. But I've got a wood-fired oven and I'm just learning how to cook from scratch. It's completely different. Mm. And of course, you don't want to waste all that heat. So whilst you can get it, up to 450 degrees.
Mm.
You can only get your oven at home up to 240 max.
Yeah.
So you can't cook a pizza in an oven at home because you can't get it high enough. It won't go that high.
Yeah.
So to have all that, you know, it's great, isn't it, watching wood burn? It's very primeval. And then sticking a pizza in it, it literally bubbles straight away because it is so, so hot.
It's interesting, the different styles of cooking, isn't it? Like, for many years, I used to cook on an Aga.
Yeah.
And that's slow. Completely different again.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way you cook. And it was funny, having for many years cooked in an Aga. And then when I moved, I didn't have an Aga anymore. And I'll put things in the oven and come home and they were stone cold.
Yeah, it's
and
weird that.
Yeah. I forgot to turn the oven on.
The other thing with these wood-fired ovens, of course, is once you finish cooking that, the temperature then starts to drop and you'll get some temperature there for the next 3 or 4 hours.
Mm.
And so you can put in a casserole, you can put in all sorts of stuff. And it's not just about pizzas by any means. But you have to learn to cook again. You have to completely learn to cook in a different way, a bit like with an Aga, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So,
before we go, I want to tell you something really exciting. And this is about the London Food Tech Week.
Right.
And it's a whole week of really interesting conference things, people discussing the future of food, looking at technology of food. And if anybody's interested, they really need to go onto the website. So it's London Food Tech Week. It's between the 17th and the 21st of October. There are literally hundreds of events with all people from around the world discussing food and also lots of visits and all sorts of other things. The Food Talk Show is having an event there as well.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So we're having an event on the 20th of October. If anybody's anywhere near London Bridge, Elephant and Castle, we're at the superb Mercato Metropolitano, try saying that, which is this fabulous new Italian food venue that's opened. It's got great artisan food makers there. So it's a bit like Borough Market, but Italian.
Right,
just Italian all the way through. They've got a great pizza oven there, by the way. and we're doing two events, one at 3 o'clock on the 20th of October and one at 5:30. And we're just unboxing stuff. Do you remember we said
we're going to
do unboxing?
How cool
which
is
basically
that?
Basically, we've been scouring the country for the weirdest and most wonderful foodie products. Some are food to eat, some are, you know, gadgets and stuff.
Yeah.
We put them in a box. We have a panel. They open the box up and then they just try and work out how to use it or what they think of it with no prior knowledge.
Right.
And they just give their instant feedback. So great
fun.
Yeah, great fun. London Food Tech Week. Check it out.
Be there.
Yeah,
you don't
Google
want to miss
it.
That. There's lots of good stuff going on.
Google
right?
it. So that'll be really good fun.
Fantastic. So you've got lots of interesting things coming up.
Food is really taking off. Not just what we eat, but the whole sector, restaurants,
I think it's
delivery.
The whole sector. It's not just what we eat. It's not just what we drink. It's all the technology that goes around it. You know, we've had some fascinating people again today using technology in food. And it's making a huge difference to how we consume things, how we buy things.
I think people are thinking about it differently.
Yeah.
And food's been behind. It's been behind, you know, fintech, financial technology. It's been behind health technology. But, God, it's catching up. It's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
We're seeing some great stuff. And if there's anybody out there that is producing or developing some amazing new technology or food stuff or whatever,
let us know.
Send it in. We'll have a really good look at it.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. We want to know about the things that are going on out there. So do let us know here on the Food Talk Show.
That Paul can eat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, why not? I'll eat anything, mate.
Some new kebab machine or something like that. It'll be right up his street. Or a pie.
I still want to experience this chip dispensing machine.
That's amazing. Can you have a vending machine that does hot chips?
I want one. Yeah. See, if I could do away with an entire kitchen with one. I'll just have one of those in my kitchen. That would be fine. God, yeah. Cool. Anyway, listen, you've been listening to the Food Talk Show. It's been a pleasure to share an hour with you again. And we look forward to speaking to you all next week on the Food Talk Show here on Thursday afternoons.
With some more weird and wonderful stuff.
Yeah. So have a fantastic week and we will see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.